This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Alrighty, 9 minutes after 11 o'clock here on Power Perspective. Thank you very much for staying with us. I am Sebenzile Nkambule. Remember, lines open 0861-987-000. Tweet me at Sebenzile Nkambule and at Power FM 987. All right, shifting gears again now. My guests this evening for this particular conversation, we're talking about vote buying in elections with a particular focus on Kenya, the East African giant, the country of Kenya. I am speaking to Aaron L. Ehrlich, who is joining us on the line now from Montreal in Canada and is the assistant professor for the Center for the Study of Democratic Citizenship at McGill University, and Sekou Otondi is on the line from Kenya, who is a PhD student at the Institute of Diplomacy and International Studies at the University of Nairobi. Now, Kenya is set to hold their next general election next year on the 9th of August, and already some major concerns having been expressed around the issue of vote buying. And as we know, we truly want democracy at its best, right? For people to truly have a say, and not, of course, to see the outcome being all decided even months, right? Almost a year before the elections themselves. I'll start with you, Aaron. Good evening, and welcome to Power Perspective.
Good evening. Nice to be here with you.
Thank you very much for joining us. I mean, these concerns, when you hear of concerns so early, right, ahead of the elections themselves, it's quite concerning because from here onwards, you expect that it'll only intensify the closer we get to the date of the election.
Yes, it is very concerning. Though it has been a long-standing issue within Kenyan politics, so it's not so surprising that it's coming up early because it's been happening for quite some time.
And is it normal also to have it start this early as well? I mean, we often focus on an election year, and I suppose it also just depends on how hectic the news cycle is, that we'll only perhaps pick up on it a lot closer as well. But I suppose in many ways, it's also important that you pick up on it as early as this, because you can then monitor it even closer.
That's right. It's important to monitor it. And my colleague on the ground in Nairobi can probably speak to a little bit more about what's happening there. But the issue is that in Kenya, there's also primary elections. And so in many constituencies in Kenya, the election is won or lost in the primary. So vote buying goes on in the primary elections as well, which occur a great deal of time before the general election as well. So there are multiple stages of the vote buying process because you have to get through a primary as well.
And how explicit is you know, so-called vote buying, right? Because there's electioneering, there's campaigning that happens ahead of elections. So what might be seen as politicians interacting with the electorate can, I suppose, very quickly become an inappropriate exchange of sorts.
That's right. And often many voters themselves don't really understand what the difference is, or there's some confusion and there's a large gray area. So if you're buying people cornmeal or you're buying people other types of food items, people don't necessarily think that that's necessarily vote buying. There's also a great deal of uncertainty sometimes among some voters about whether their ballot is actually secret. So there are several concerns there. One is it the do voters actually know that what they're taking is it doesn't require them to vote for somebody? And two, do they know that their ballot is secret? So even if they do take that, they can vote their conscience and not worry about something bad happening to them.
Mm-hmm. Let me bring in Sekou Otondi to the conversation as well. Sekou, it's good to have you on Power Perspective. Hi.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you for having me in the conversation too. Thank you.
Thank you. I know it's already after midnight in Kenya, so we do appreciate you staying up for us. You are on the ground. You have, of course, the first-hand experience, really, to to gauge what we are already seeing. And perhaps we can pick up from that last point from Aaron about these social interactions within an election process. I mean, we see it the world over. We just had a local government election as well, just last month, beginning of last month. But even ahead of that, notwithstanding, of course, all sorts of issues with the pandemic, but ahead of that, you see politicians visiting homes. They take pictures with babies. They attend church services. They do all sorts of things to try and convince people, not only by offering up their positions in terms of the issues of the day that you hope the electorate will be engaging on, but they also want to posture in a particular way. And maybe there are some cultural norms, perhaps, Seko, if you can speak to that in fact encourage some sort of exchange. So if you're going to come into our community and you don't bring anything, perhaps interpreted as disrespectful, or maybe you're not serious about our vote. And so the next person who brings something is then more likely to get support from us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think looking at the context of Kenya, more specifically, is the fact that election buying has been on for a long time. And again, I think if you look at the aspect of election buying and generally looking at election is not like a singular process, and it's all kind of a long process, which starts when the last vote is counted and when it begins. So election buying doesn't occur essentially during the period when election is going to happen, but election is a 5-year process, and within that particular process, we've seen like even finding some of the aspirants buying voters to trying to plant them in their constituencies as early as possible so that they can be able to stay in that constituency when the elections come. So I think looking at the Kenyan context, then I think it's kind of a traditional kind of ingrained within the social fabric of society as well within the specific context of Kenya.
So it's almost expected, and not doing it is what is outside of the norm, Seko?
It's become kind of a norm. And I think when you're talking about election buying as a norm, I think we also have to understand the psychology of the voter, because the fact remains that you'll find sometimes the politicians will give out money to certain individuals, and all of them will reach out to provide money. And at the same time, you'll find that whether they give money or not, the decision of voting then stays with the voter in the long run. And I think voter buying in Kenya is a problem, and that compromises the outcome of the election as well. But I think the voters also have a conscience, and they make up their own choices at the ballot, which is a secret balloting. Mm-hmm. And you specifically can't pinpoint exactly how a voter will vote, depending, because every candidate will be distributing money. So I think in the long run, the voter also has a choice, and is a human being, and there's a psychology. And it has got a conscience, and that's very hard to determine at the ballot box. Essentially, how does he vote, depending on who gives what? You might get a lot of money, but you might still vote for your candidate anyway, because you got money, you received money from both or all the candidates involved in the election or in the campaign period.
At the end of the day, then, Seko, on some level, those who are recipients of whatever, right, is used to then buy their vote, are beneficiaries, and I imagine they would enjoy that. Here you are playing different politicians up against each other, but of course that's limited, because ultimately, if you don't get the right people in office, then you don't get the services as a people. You don't get what you should be getting from those who put their hands up to hopefully serve the people. But I mean, if they know they're there based on having bought support, they won't be bothered by service or giving the service delivery that they should.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's right, because you'll find that the fact that you have to kind of build a huge economic watches or a huge financial watches. It means that you have to go out of your way either to, when you get to office, to try to recover that. So it's kind of a profiteering kind of way of doing things. And I think then it boils down again to the aspect of the kind of what we call the economic or the corrupt nature of the elections in Kenya. Because then what that means is that if the electoral process is corrupt, then it's very hard then to kind of look at it like looking at the voting process as within the lenses of voter buying. It's an immoral process, and it's like it destroys the trust between the electorate and the person who is vying for office. But at the same time, like I said earlier, whether all these candidates tend to want to buy votes from the voters, and essentially what that means is that if you give me 50 shillings to go ahead and buy my vote, and another person can give me 50 shillings or 100 shillings to buy the same vote, I have an equal kind of opinion and decision based on when I go to cast my vote. So it might influence my mind in the sense that somebody gave me more money, or it might not actually influence my decision, because after all, I know I'll not see these politicians in the next 5 years or so. Thinking about what an electoral voter might think is that receiving this money means that regardless of who goes in, the expectation is that no service will be provided adequately by either candidate. So who has the money? And I've heard this a lot in Nairobi in Kenya, people talking about if it gives you money, eat the money, but when you go to the ballot, vote wisely. So the person will eat the money, use the money, but I think at the ballot box, that's where the decision is decided, because nobody will come to the ballot box and tell you, okay, yeah, I gave you this amount of money, and I gave you this amount of money, so you must vote for me in this particular manner. So I think it's kind of boils down to individual human conscience and decision-making.
My guest this evening, Seko Otondi, who's a PhD student at the University of Nairobi at the Institute of Diplomacy and International Studies, as well as Aaron Elrich, who's joining us from Montreal, an assistant professor for the Center for the Study of Democratic Citizenship at McGill University. We're talking about voter buying in Kenya, who, of course, are going or having a general election in August of next year. The line's still open for you on 0861-987-000. Aaron, coming back to you and your experience working on the ground and in the field of democracy assistance, what is your sense or your experience really from what people then understand about this practice? It of course is also, it becomes difficult to monitor if you ultimately are unable to tell whether or not the buying itself worked or how a voter then decided to vote. But at the end of the day, it is obviously worrying in the sense that it is subverting elections, question the integrity of elections, and then question the state of the democracy of that country.
Yeah, it's a great question, and there's been a lot of work in a lot of different locations, many around Africa and Uganda there, and in Kenya, and there's been in other smaller places like Sao Tome and Principe, and the point there is that I think that we need to give the communities more agency, and we need to really talk to them about what the downstream implications are. What happens when they take this money? And as Seko said, it's like a tradition in many places. People, they'll take money from every candidate, and some of people will be influenced. Some won't. Will. And so if that cycle continues, then you're perpetuating candidates having to get that money back by stealing from the public coffers and by otherwise diverting funds. And so I think a lot has to be done to work with communities to help them better understand what the implications of them taking money are, and to really what Seko said is, which is to really encourage candidates to vote their conscience, even if they do take the money at the end of the day. Maybe they really do need that money and they can't afford not to take it, but if they do take it, to really vote for the candidate they think that will provide them the best public services. And there was just a very large study in Uganda that was carried out that found that these types of working with communities on information, voters voted on the ground when it came to election time. They tended to vote for the candidates that had given less money when they were given this education compared to the places where that kind of information work and on the ground work with citizens wasn't carried out.
And would you say, Aaron, that there's a healthy appreciation and understanding that this is illegal? It shouldn't be happening. But when a practice has become so ingrained, when it's become the norm, the fact that it's illegal is almost it's not consequential. It's not even an issue, in fact, because this is just what people do.
That's correct. I mean, if you talk to my experience with talking to Kenyan politicians on the ground and to voters themselves is that while people know that it's well, they don't really see consequences. For the most time, nobody is prosecuted for it. It's very rare for there to be a case brought, even though it is in the Kenyan code. And so people just shrug it off and say, well, you know, I can get away with this. So I should take the money. And the politicians think that they can get away with it, and so they should do it because when they get elected, they're gonna get more rewards, more money. You know, they're gonna spend money to get elected, but then they're gonna get more money in office. And so it's kind of a cycle that needs to be broken. There's ways to do it from the voter side, and there's ways to do it from the politician side. And it's I advocate for working more with on the voter side, but there's certainly we could discuss if you're interested some of the things that could be done on the politician side. There's been some interesting attempts in Nigeria and some other places.
Yeah, let's speak to that. Ultimately, the goal for politicians, you want to get reelected. You focus on the next election once this one is done, you move on to the next thing. So how open or prepared are they to engage on this if it isn't wholly and solely about their chances at doing better at the polls?
Yeah, so one interesting thing that's been tried in the Philippines and in Nigeria is to have in Nigeria, like in Kenya, there's a tradition of public gatherings, and so what they've gotten to do is they've gotten all the politicians to come together and sign a public pact that says that they won't, in front of their voters, that says that the politicians won't engage in that behavior. So to try to publicly, for the politicians to come together to publicly say that they're not going to do that. Now, of course, that's very hard and they can always violate that. But that's one kind of public way that the politicians could come together to try and groups could work with politicians to come together to try them to not engage in that type of behavior. Enforcing the rule of law, as we all know, is just very hard and takes a lot of time and effort. And I'm not that optimistic in the short term.
I'll take your thoughts as well. Remember, you can tweet us at Seven Gambule and at Parfum 987. It's just coming up to 28 after 11.
Power Perspective with Seven Zile Gambule. Call Seven Zile on 0861-987-000.
All right, let's hear from Brazilian Spirit View.
Hey, thanks a lot, Seven Zile, for the second bite, if I may just come in. Especially now that you talk of Kenya. Kenya is one country where, you know, I had the fortunate opportunity of being up and around in Kenya for about 6 months or so on some other businesses. Right. But anyhow, my question is this. The Kenyan issue is a very, very complex and dynamic type of situation. Because once, or another thing that I discovered while I was about there in Kenya, they have a very, very strong tribal leaning of the Kikuyus, the Kalenjinis, and you know, and all those type of things. This is from the times of Oginga Odinga in those years to Jomo Kenyatta period. Tribalism was very strong. And secondly, again, as we talk about Kenya and its vast landscape and countryside and towns and cities, you get to Nairobi, for example, it's got that highly densely informal populated area, quite near where I was staying in Eastleigh, around that corner. And you have an informal settlement there. It's very, very highly densely and highly populated. Now, where are you going to be going around and giving everybody 50,000 Kenya shillings or 20,000 Kenya shillings in such a crowd of that magnitude? And then you go to the part of Mombasa, for example, around the areas there, your Malindi Islands and so forth and so forth and so forth. You know, they are so scattered and far apart. And life there has got its own challenges. Eh? Now you want to bribe people. Now, as we talk about Kenya, just in closing of 2 seconds, let me say this. It's not only Kenya alone that has these funny briberies. In other countries, it's done differently. Even here in South Africa, where I'm staying, where I live, where I was born, it's done in also different ways. They will run big parties, the so-called ruling party. And believe you me, it's a party bigger than a Christmas day. And it's happening during what? Campaigning and so forth and so forth. It's also a way of bribery. And other parties will pass in people left, right, and center in buses of more than 20, 30, 50. That's also bribery. Anyhow, thank you.
Thank you very much for your call there, Brawili. Good points there indeed. Sekou, let me come back to you. Do you have any thoughts to that call?
Sorry, say again.
Just your own thoughts and reflections on the points that Prabili was making there. Just about how it's done in various means, but also he's challenging the point about given how, you know, how large some of these areas are. For politicians to be successful in this, they need to be quite targeted, isn't it? And if you aren't targeted enough, how are you really impactful? So is voter buying that impactful?
I think voter buying, if you're looking at the aspect of what the caller just mentioned, I think is the aspect of looking at the aspect of the diversity or in terms of ethnicity and its influence again on the outcome of the elections and within the context again of voter buying and bribery, then I think again, like he mentions rightly, I think there's a lot of Kenya is kind of diverse in terms of having different ethnic groups, and but I think again, looking at the aspect of voter bribery within that particular context is the fact that majority of Kenyans are young people, and majority of these young people are unemployed; they don't have jobs. So this cuts across the ethnic divide. And essentially, regardless of whether you from another community and you're young and you don't have a job, basically you'll be tended to have to commit to or you'll have to end up in most cases driven by accessing or getting that particular token, which is provided by politicians. And having said that, I think also there's the aspect of looking at the aspect of that vote buying, then like I mentioned earlier, then it all then comes back down to the aspect of the social fabric of the nation, because you'll find that even institutions, like religious institutions or churches, accept that money. So if they are given those bribery or given money by politicians who are compromised, then what about individuals who are young Kenyans and unemployed? Basically, they'll go ahead and take that. So I think it also calls down back to the aspect of the social fabric of society as well.
Erin, your own reflections from the caller?
No, I mean, it raises a very important point. A lot of what was being said is that the politicians often don't do this work themselves. Of course they can't, because in many places, like in eastern Kenya, the distances are long, but they have local contacts and they work for what is known as brokers in the literature, or people like churches or local important leader, tribal or community leaders that then funnel the money to individual voters. And there's such a large gap between the salaries that politicians make, which are thousands and thousands and thousands of U.S. dollars, compared to what a Kenyan in a rural area might make, which might be, you know, 100 U.S. dollars. I'm sorry, I haven't been in South Africa in a while, so I can't convert that to rand, but maybe you can do that for me. And so those vast differences actually allow politicians to to pay a very large number of voters. So you would be surprised at how many voters the brokers, the people that help the politicians, they can actually touch with money. I've also seen politicians' offices, lines, very, very, very long lines. So people, there is a lot of contact. That's how that gets done. And Seko is right. I agree with what he said about the, it cuts across the youth, across tribal and ethnic lines.
Seko, just on just as we wrap it up, right? But of course, a lot of activity currently on the ground leading up to that general election. What are some of the key issues? If you can just give us a sense of what matters right now to people in Kenya, that will be key leading up to the elections on the campaign trail. But what are people really hoping to see some real change around?
Okay, thank you for that. I think looking at the Kenyan context and speaking specifically for the upcoming election, I think what we've seen is the aspect of the economic models. Like we've got the main two horses running up for elections. That is, I think he hasn't yet stated clearly that he'll be standing. I think he should be making a key statement this coming Friday this week. That is Raila Odinga. So he's talking about both of them are having this kind of bottom-down kind of economic approach, but framing it in different ways. And I think that's appealing more to a wider population of young people and a cross-ethnic divide. And if we can be able to, they can be able to sustain that in the sense of talking about the economy and talking about the jobs and unemployment, then I tend to feel that might shift the ground and more youths might vote, or who are actually the majority of Kenyan voters, might vote for a candidate who is more willing to provide for economic recovery and creating more jobs, as opposed to merely voter bribery. But again, moving on, I think we're still going to see a lot of voter bribery, especially at the people who are kind of vying for elections more so at the lower levels, that is the, for example, the ward representatives, and I mean at the lower levels as well. But I think, like Aaron has mentioned again, there's a key aspect of voter bribery, even it comes up to the aspect of the presidential level, because Kenya's election is one of the most expensive elections, I think, not only in Africa, but I think worldwide in terms of the official amount that is used for the entire election process, as well as the individual amount at which political parties as well as individuals actually use to ensure they get into office. So there are going to be some kind of changing dynamics, I think, hopefully, in terms of the approaches to the election and how candidates kind of campaign, the campaign platforms here.
What of issues of immigration, for example? How high up there on the list of issues is it that people care about?
Sorry, I think there's a slight break.
Immigration, issues around immigration, Seko. I mean, you've spoken about unemployment, so there's a competition for opportunities as well. Is that an issue that's high up there on the list of concerns?
For immigration, I don't think so far is a bit high, because I think when you're looking at Kenya, mostly what I'm thinking of immigration is basically the aspect of hosting persons maybe from countries within the region which are kind of destabilized, but I don't think that's going to play a key role right now. If you look at immigration generally, I think the key thing that will inform Kenya's election is basically the economy, because there's lots of young Kenyans looking out for jobs and really wants to get either into opportunity which creates jobs or maybe gives them kind of meaningful earning. And I think that's going to play a very, very big, big, big decision coming up. The youths are going to play a key role, and you can see there's a lot of all the key political parties and individuals targeting young people to register to vote. And at the same time, you find that there's voter apathy among those young people, because the last election conducted has been young people not wanting to go and pick votes, because I think there's dissatisfaction among the young people. But the top politicians are really banking on the voting for the youth. So I don't think immigration might be a bigger key issue of discussion in the upcoming election. It will be more about the economy and the job creation, etc.
Seko, thank you very much for your comments and for joining us this evening. Erin, let's just wrap it up with you. Just broadly the sort of trends as well that we are seeing on the continent. If you could just share some reflections and some thoughts on that, and really to the point that Seko was making about the issues that matter, and of course how that correlates to then this issue that we've been discussing this evening of voter buying.
Yeah, I think that zooming out, I think that Seko is right that the young and the youth is an issue that really across the continent has become a really important issue, because with so many youth without good jobs and an increasingly educated youth population that then go to school and can't find work, facing that challenge is going to be an immense political challenge. And tying that to vote buying, if that challenge isn't met, then they and these youth can't find job, then of course they're going to try to find money in other ways, and it's going to exacerbate the current vote buying situation, make it worse than it already it is. So I think there's a bit of a crossroads, and the two are very related. We're solving this important political problem across a wide range of countries is gonna really influence the extent to which vote buying continues to be a problem. Because if those youth get good jobs and become gainfully employed, they're gonna want better public services. They're gonna move into a different class, social class, and have different demands. So I think these two issues are really important and really interrelated.
Mm-hmm. Erin, thank you very much for making time for us today as well. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Have a great evening.
Thank you, Erin Elrich, who is on the line from Montreal, assistant professor at the Center for the Study of Democratic Citizenship at McGill University. We're also joined by Seko Otondi, PhD student at the Institute of Diplomacy and International Studies at the University of Nairobi. Asante, sana to both of them. All right, almost 15 to the top of the hour. Remember, lines open for you on 0861-987-000.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.